The name that comes up, former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge. McCain opposes abortion rights. He tells the Weekly Standard the Republican Party shouldn't exclude someone from higher office just because they support abortion rights.
Fox News Radio's Jennifer Kuiper. At the Olympics, the Redeem Team shines and a tennis star falls. Fox News Radio's Rich Johnson is live in Beijing.
Dave, the U.S. basketball men are living up to that label of the Redeem Team as they just crushed Greece 92-69. The game a bit of revenge over Greece upsetting the U.S. in the 2006 World Championships. And a bona fide upset on the tennis court. American James Blake beat the best player in the world, Roger Federer. In eight previous meetings with Federer, Blake had won just a single set. Dave?
Rich on Wall Street. News of higher inflation deflating stocks a little bit. The Dow's down 20. Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
If you're a business owner, you've made tough decisions and you've achieved success, but now you have another tough choice. How to expand and grow your business. You don't want to pay rent, but building looks expensive. Let General Steel show you how you can build quickly and for much less than you imagined with a pre-engineered steel building. You won't believe how attractive your building can be, and we have the pictures to prove it. Call 866-91-STEEL. Call us today and keep your competitive edge. That's 866-91-STEEL.
This is the sound of a popular American motorcycle. It's the sound of freedom, the open road, really good times. And this is what it sounds like with a drunk guy on it. How do you like the sound of that? Cops are cracking down on drunk motorcycle riders. If you ride drunk, you will get caught and you will get arrested. Drunk riding. Over the limit, under arrest. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Now more on what's going on Wall Street. To start the day, Fox's Brenda Butner live watching the markets.
Pretty simple. Stocks down because your prices are up. The latest measure of inflation shows another big jump in consumer prices, 0.8% in July, twice what the market expected. Now, when you take out energy and food, the so-called core rate that the Fed watches, not up as much, but still rose by 0.3% and above a forecast again. Low prices, though, that got you into Walmart, the world's biggest retailer, rang in a 17% rise in quarterly profit and boosted its full-year outlook. But oil up earlier again this morning, now down a bit, still recovering some of its recent losses. The Dow is falling, down just only about 20 now, though. Back to you.
Brenda, thank you. More homeowners are struggling with late payments. Foreclosure filings up 8% last month over June, 55% higher than a year ago, according to RealtyTrack. In South Carolina, farmers are struggling.
Governor Mark Sanford wants most of his drought-stricken state declared a federal disaster area aimed at freeing up low-interest emergency loans for South Carolina farmers who've lost more than 30% of this year's corn, hay, and pasture crops.
Fox News Radio's Lisa Brady. So what fuels Michael Phelps, that record-setting gold medal swimmer?
The diet consists of 12,000 calories a day. Phelps starts off with breakfast, 3 fried egg sandwiches, 2 cups of coffee, then a 5-egg omelet, a bowl of grits, 3 French toast slices, and 3 chocolate chip pancakes. Ready for lunch? A pound of pasta, 2 big ham and cheese sandwiches with mayo, washing it down with 1,000 calories worth of energy drinks. Then for dinner, another pound of pasta, an entire pizza, and 1,000 calories again of energy drinks. Now before you start downing pies and pasta, think about this. Phelps swims 5 hours a day, 6 days a week for training, so hit the gym first. Ken Duffy, Fox News Radio.
Of course, he must wait a half hour before he swims after he eats, right? I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
You're listening to 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
We were all looking forward to what our lives would be like after graduation. We had the world at our fingertips, the best of friends. We vowed to stay in touch no matter where life took us. We were ready to take on anything, almost invincible. But we weren't. I can see how after graduation, friends can come and go. But I didn't see that coming.
Be smart. Drive smart. Turn off your phone, obey the speed limit, buckle up, and never drive under the influence. Sponsored by the New York State Governor's Traffic Safety Committee and the NYS.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County in the vicinity for the morning hours. We'll see cloudy skies with a few scattered showers through the area. We'll see partly sunny weather this afternoon. More showers and thunderstorms are possible. Highs into the lower 80s tonight. Mostly cloudy, a shower or gusty thunderstorm. Patchy fog overnight, lows into the middle 60s. Friday, mostly cloudy, more showers and thunderstorms through the morning and the afternoon hours. Highs will range into the upper 70s, Some heavy rainfall ends Friday night. We'll get into partial clearing on Saturday. Still a slight risk of a shower. Highs upper 70s. More the same on Sunday. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr., reporting for WVOX, WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center. Brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center. Right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents Environmentally Sound with environmental activist Bob Lebensold. Join Bob and his guests as they talk about protecting our most precious resource, the environment. Now, here's Bob Lebensold.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, August 14th, 2008, the 56th day of summer. We have lost 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday and 45 whole minutes since last we met 3 weeks ago. The sun rose at 6:04 this morning. It will set at 7:54 this evening. We will have 13 hours and 50 minutes of daylight today. Moon rises at 6:52. It will set at 4:34 tomorrow morning. We are 2 days shy of full moon, so it should appear just about full if you look up at the night sky this evening. Next high tides in New Rochelle at 10:41. In Yonkers at 8:42 p.m., Dobbs Ferry 9:10 p.m., and in Haverstraw at 9:52 p.m. They're pretty much high at the moment, but those are the exact times. Now we have our regular feature, the sad part of this program, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. 12 American service members died in August, just this month, as of last Sunday. To date, there have been 4,141 American deaths, tens of thousands more with grave physical and or mental injuries. Casualty list for today, Sergeant Kenneth B. Gibson, age 25, of Christiansburg, Virginia, died of a roadside bomb in Iraq last Sunday. That is less than a week ago. Sergeant Jose E. Ulloa, age 23, from New York City, died of a roadside bomb in the same incident as Sergeant Kenneth B. Gibson. Corporal Adam T. McKiskey, age 21. He was a Marine from Cherry Valley, Illinois. He was involved in supporting combat operations in Anbar province, and he died on August 7th, which was a week ago today. Corporal Stuart S. Trejo, age 25, from Whitefish, Montana. I always loved that name, Whitefish, Montana. It brings me back to my childhood when I ate whitefish for breakfast. It was just very sweet. And Corporal Stuart S. Trejo, who was age 25, lived in that town, and we miss him. He was also a Marine, and he died with Corporal McKiskey on August 7th. Sergeant Gary M. Henry, age 34, from the Indiana Army National Guard. Now, nobody joins the National Guard expecting to go to war. He's from Indianapolis, Indiana. He died also of a roadside bomb in Baghdad on August 4th. Specialist Jonathan D. Menke, age 22, of Madison, Indiana, died in that same incident as Sergeant Henry on August 4th. Private Timothy J. Hutton, age 21, from Dillon, Montana. He died in a non-combat incident in Baghdad on August 4th. I still have no idea when they say non-combat incident what that means. What does that mean? They ate a bad clam? What is it? And here's a lady who died, a female soldier, Private Jennifer L. Cole, age 34. She was with the 101st Airborne of the Army. She's from American Canyon, California, also a non-combat related injury, which caused her death on August 2nd. And Sergeant Brian K. Miller, age 37, from the Indiana Army National Guard from Pendleton, Indiana. He died in a vehicle accident in Iraq on August 2nd. All of these American Armed Service members were alive when last we met 3 weeks ago. In fact, they were all alive within the last 2 weeks. How many more American servicemen and women alive today will be gone when next we meet? Nobody knows. Each life is a treasure and a tragic loss to each of us. May these American servicemen and women live forever live forever in our hearts. And may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Well, it's time for the Culture Corner, which is my reviews of plays, ballets, opera, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Unfortunately, I have seen nothing since last we met, largely because... just largely because Broadway seems to be asleep right now. I don't really get much that's out there. The only movie I truly like to see is called Man on Wire. It's a documentary about Philippe Petit, the man who walked between the towers of the World Trade Center while it was actually under construction, and he had a lot of guts, and I admire him, and I'd like to see that movie, and I'd actually like to interview him at some point. Stay tuned, maybe we will. Okay, you are listening to WVOX AM 1460, originating in New Rochelle. If you're listening in Alexandria, Virginia, Alexandria, Egypt, Edison, New Jersey, or on the campus of Edison College in Southwest Florida, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. This program is Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, and my first guest today is Peter Parenti. I think I have his last name right. Correct me, Peter, if I'm wrong. He's chairman of the Save Our Armory group in New Rochelle, of which I am a member. Welcome, Peter Parenti.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, Bob?
Do I have your name right, Peter?
Yes, you do. Good. Peter Parenti, New Rochelle, New York.
Good.
Yes,
Bob Marone straightened me out because I had it wrong. So I know you as... Can I give your email handle?
Yeah, sure you can.
Devil Dog Pete, that's how I know you.
That's me.
Okay. Pete, let's talk about this armory. There's a big development project, as pretty much everybody who listens to this station knows, in Echo Bay, the Echo Bay area. Of course, there's a lot of development all over New Rochelle, but in this particular project has raised more hackles than others for various reasons. The toxic nature of the former Con Edison site and the surrounding land and mud flats, and that's PCBs and dioxins. Perhaps we'll have an opportunity to get to that. But also moving the city yard. Where is it going to go? Who wants it? How do you do it? How much does it cost? And the issue that we are especially concerned with here is they want to throw down this this very historic old building, the armory, which was given, you could say sold, but let's just say given to the citizens of New Rochelle by the state. They charged $1, so they could say it's a sale rather than a gift, but it's quite a gift for a buck, right?
Yes.
And in the deed, it stated, you'll be specific about this, let me just tell you what I think I know. It stated in the deed that the city of New Rochelle had to maintain it and use it for community activities. Now that has not happened, and now the city just wants to say, well, it's our property, we want to throw it down. Is it the city property? Is this legitimate? Have they been true to the deed?
All right. Well, let me just back up 1 second. I just want to, hopefully it's okay with you.
Absolutely.
To make a point is that the reason why we're allowed to speak our mind and speak our piece, whether we are accurate or not, I wouldn't say accurate or not, or whether we're right or wrong, depending upon an opinion of someone, is because of the sacrifices made by soldiers and airmen and Marines in past wars and conflicts that we've had. So I pray for the troops every day, and a very nice segment to keep those names and memories alive in our hearts and in our minds.
Peter,
want to make sure that we...
Yes, and let me ask you, are you not a combat veteran yourself?
Yes, I am.
From Iraq, right?
Yes, from Desert Storm, actually.
Do you mind discussing that just a little bit personally?
Yeah, not at all. I served in the Marine Corps from 1985 to 1993. I was 17 years old, graduated New Rochelle High School, and went off to Parris Island down in South Carolina, as most Marines do. And I served active duty in Camp Lejeune down in North Carolina and Camp Geiger and also Camp Pendleton and 29 Palms in California. And then I went into the reserves, and my duty station was the Armory on East Main Street in New Rochelle. And we used to meet there as reservists for 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks during usually the summertime, and we would keep our gear there as well as our weapons and so on, and we would meet there and then go off for the weekend or for the 2 weeks to do training exercises and then return to the Armory and clean our gear and clean our weapons and turn them in and obviously make sure the Armory was spick and span before we left.
So you have a very personal connection with this Armory.
I most certainly do, and I served there for about 6 years as a reservist, and even going way back when I was about 8 years old, 9 years old, myself and also one of our committee members, John McGuire, we both were sea cadets as we were young boys, and I remember very fondly my dad bringing me there on Friday nights and dropping me off where we would learn Navy traditions and how to tie knots and how to make left faces, right faces, and learn about ships and things like that. And the Armory was just a beautiful, beautiful building and rich in history and tradition from the military. And then he would come and pick me up at about 11:30, and we would go next door to McDonald's and have a hamburger together. So that was—it's a very nice memory of mine in my life.
So tell me.
So that Armory is a very personal, had a lot of personal effects of mine in there.
Tell me what does John McGuire look like without a beard?
it goes way back, and I barely remember. I barely remember, but he was a nice young man as well as a gentleman today, and he's a good person to have on our side.
And now you are. Let me just ask you this. You've been in the Armory recently, have you?
Well, recently, as far as maybe in the beginning of the summer,
okay.
I was there.
So that's just a couple of months ago or a month ago.
Correct.
How does it compare now in terms of its condition?
It's a sin. It's a sin, in all honesty.
What has happened to it, and why has the city not taken care of it?
Well, my personal opinion, and again, just like your personal opinion, I couldn't be wrong, but my personal opinion is from since the city has taken over the ownership of the building in 1997, it has not been maintained and upkept at all. And that is also stipulated in the deed. A matter of fact, it says that the city must maintain and upkeep the properties during its ownership and can only use it for a park and or recreation facility as well as a street or highway
now,
for the citizens of New Rochelle.
Now, John Verney has, in our behalf, sent a letter to Attorney General Andrew Cuomo just this last week, asking the state, if I remember correctly, to actually take this property back because the deed has they have defaulted by their actions.
They have definitely defaulted on the deed.
Have we heard anything from the state yet, or are we still waiting for
it? We're still waiting. He doesn't expect for a couple of weeks to hear a response. We also send a copy of that letter to the city of New Rochelle and to the mayor.
Well, of course, you won't hear anything from the city until the state says something.
City at all.
But what do you you must have spoken to Chuck Strom and Mayor Noam Bramson. Chuck Strom is the city manager. For those who don't know, you must have some sense of their attitude towards this.
I'm sorry to say, but their attitude is just like everything else that the city owns around here. You know, whether you look at Hudson Park and what the fond memories I have of Hudson Park from when I was a young boy running around there when my mom used to take me there every day in the summertime during summer school vacation, you know, that has gone to the wayside as well. It's not as beat up as much, but it's surely not as used or utilized as much. And if you remember, we had the Memorial Day parade wind up down there, which was a beautiful day of seeing people in the park. But Ward Acres, obviously Fort Slocum, that the city has that and didn't want to upkeep that. And I don't want to get too much away from our topic here, but even Fort Slocum, the Army Corps of Engineers, was granted $25 million to upkeep and clean up the island. And once they did, they did a report and said that there's at least seven buildings on that island that could be restored beautifully and then handed over to Nourishel. And they asked Nourishel, what would you like us to do with those buildings? And Nourishel said, tear them down. We don't want them. They don't want to upkeep anything.
Does Nourishel have a vision for the future? Is it just an extension of New York City? Is that all that they want to do?
Well, I think all they want to do is just give all our property and all our property taxes away to these developers so they could go take their money to the bank and spend it elsewhere.
Okay.
You know, all they're doing is making some high-rises, and which are not even occupied. Even Trump Towers is only 45% occupied. And it's a very beautiful building, I think. But to keep adding and adding more when we don't even have things that exist that are full or occupied, why do they keep building more?
Right, and there's a lot more going up besides. Right in my neighborhood, there's a monstrosity going up. Okay, now is there kind of a class thing here between the North End and the South End? Let me tell you why I ask you that. I've heard the mayor say that some of our neighborhoods should be kept in the true suburban area, the condition, the way we know them, the way we've loved them. But others need to be upgraded. Now, I take that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, or anybody who's listening can call in and correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me he's talking to what is probably his main constituency, the North Enders, and saying, we're not going to touch your nice houses.
Correct.
We're going to trash the South End. We're going to put all the commerce and a heavy residential concentration in the South End, and we're going to leave your houses alone. Is he actually talking to them in his kind of political speak?
That's my personal opinion. You know, the people in the North End, I have nothing against them, and we're all Nourishelians, and we're all hopefully in it for the same cause. But they are in an uproar that they want to put a one-story addition on top of the little market there where Friendly's used to be, and now Cozy's, I believe it's named Cozy's Salads, is right there on Quaker Ridge Road. They want to add one more story to that, which is, what, 10 feet, 12 feet?
Right.
And the people in the North End and Wackagill are just having, oh, my God, this is like the end of the world.
Right.
And they're all, getting together and signing petitions and writing emails to the mayor and so on. And I haven't heard much from there since. So whether that's going to go through or not, I don't know. But I'd be interested to see how the city council reacts.
But on the south end, they're just developing like crazy. Okay, there's so many interesting things we can talk about, Peter. Let's go to the Armory. What is the condition of or the state of this committee? Where are we going with it? Some people think that it's a done deal, that the Armory has
most
no chance.
Not. They did MOU, which is a memorandum of understanding with Forest City, which just tells Forest City what Nourishel or the administration of Nourishel expects from them, and Nourishel receives that back from Forest City. What should Nourishel expect from Forest City? So that's what a memorandum of understanding is. I understand what you expect from me, and you understand what I expect from you. So then they can move on. It is not a done deal in the Armory. Nothing is a done deal. The MOU, they still have to do the scope planning, which they have to come back to Nourishel, meaning Forest City, to let Nourishel know what is going to be the environmental impact if the plan does go through, if they change a plan and have an alternate plan, or B, if they do nothing at all. So all these things, there's so much time before any of this is going to be so concrete, nothing, and there's still time to make changes and amend things. And the people in Nourishel need to know that. The Armory is not condemned. It is not, it's not a definite that it needs to come down. And we don't personally think, as a Save the Armory Committee, that it must the only way that that area can be developed is by taking the armory down. We are all for development, but we want smart development. We don't mind, and we want and encourage smart development in the area. There's plenty of property there, and 26 acres to be exact. But and the armory sits on a one-acre plot with a three-acre parcel, and out of those 26 acres, we think that it's easily salvageable to incorporate the armory into the development of the area.
Okay, now, so what you say, we are for development. Now, the way they have it planned, of course, is going to be the water is going to be part of that. The Echo Bay, the actual water and the muds, the mud flats. It's a tidal thing, so the mud is virtually completely exposed during low tide. I wonder how they plan to accommodate that. But also, has anyone said anything about the PCBs and dioxins? I mean, we've been talking about that for years, but I've never, ever heard any city official address it decently. In fact, I've never heard any official city, county, or state, or federal. No.
I agree with you.
Why don't they?
And Mr. Mayor is supposedly an environmentalist, and he really wants to keep, try to be environmentally sound for New Rochelle. They do say that with this project, there will be a $25 million cleanup of the Echo Bay area. And some of that is the Con Ed site, obviously, and all along where the cement plant is for Nelsted and Landscape Depot that's down there. It all needs to be cleaned one way or another, whether we left it alone, and it definitely needs to be cleaned. But the $25 million is granted just like the fort off of
Slocum?
Yes, Fort Slocum, just like Fort Slocum, that we have granted money to us to clean up the area.
Okay.
Whether this goes through or not, that money is slotted for us. So New Rochelle could just take over that job and the reins.
All right, first of all, $25 million is probably not even close to being enough to cleaning up toxins. Second of all, it's not just picking up a few discarded plastic bags.
Correct.
We have toxins sitting in all of that mud there, and Con Edison's already put millions into cleaning the upland portion and capping the upland. But it's not deep enough. The minute you start putting in any kind of foundations, you're going straight back into that contaminated soil. And the mud, to my knowledge, has never been dredged or anything. So if the mayor wants to have environmental credentials, he has to do more than say, well, I'm for bicycle paths, so we save gas. That's a lot of crap. Bicycle paths are fine, but that is not the issue. The issue is that the poisons that will really potentially make people sick and potentially kill people. That's the issue.
And they have to address it. Pieces of property that is in the area down there.
Which is?
I believe the armory is on one of the cleanest pieces of property.
Why wouldn't it be?
That whole development.
Because it hasn't been used industrially. The city yard has all kinds
Correct.
Of chemicals and things, which that's a legitimate.
It was very much used in its earlier years as the Brooklyn Navy Yard would send Navy vessels up through the Sound and into our marina and would meet up with the, there was a docking space back there. So many, 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 many years ago, it was a very vital part of the the armory was the water back there. That's why it's one of the very few in the country naval militia armories.
Okay.
Very few. And to our knowledge as of to date, and we might be wrong in maybe one case or two, but to our knowledge, we have never saw a armory taken down before in any manner whatsoever.
Okay.
Always reused and reinstituted back into the community.
Okay. Peter, I know that you talked to Bob Marone on the air, and I'm going to have you back on here. Also, perhaps we'll get Ron Tocci to join you, and we will talk about this much more. So let's just put the city on notice that you have to do the right thing. You have to address the real issues and not just political talk, because we're not so dumb that we don't see right through that.
Yes, sir, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on, Peter, and we'll talk to you very soon. Right. That was Peter Parenti. He is, I believe, he's the chairman of our group. He's certainly an articulate spokesman for our group, and our group being the Save Our Armory. We will be back in just a few minutes. My next guest for the day is Charles Blow. Charles is an op-ed columnist for the New York Times, and we'll be talking about the Barack Obama campaign, and we will be right back.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lori London. Hostilities still high. Gunfire on the streets of Georgia as Fox's Steve Harrigan and crew run for cover.
Right now you have a mix. You have a mix of guns, humiliation, and alcohol. So there's a lot of shooting going on.
A U.S. official says Russia's sabotaging Georgia's airfields and seems intent on crippling their already battered military. Serena Williams surprisingly beaten in Olympic women's tennis singles by Russia in the quarterfinal of the Olympic singles. More nightmares for the American dream.
July may go down as the worst month on record for foreclosure filings, which jumped 8% last month.
Fox Radio's Chris Barnes in Washington says it's one in every 464 households.
Foreclosures are up 55% in a year, according to Realty Track, which says California, Florida, Ohio, and Arizona had the most.
Fox News. We report, you decide.
Hi, Mom. How's the hip feeling?
Better, sweetheart. I don't know what I'd do without these nurses and aides. I'm just worried about how much it's all costing.
We'll figure it out somehow.
Governor Patterson is proposing cutting almost $1 billion in funding for our state's already troubled hospitals, nursing homes, and home care providers. The cuts would mean fewer nurses and cutbacks in services. Hospitals and nursing homes would close their doors. Quality would suffer. And the governor's plan would increase costs for families by hundreds of dollars a year.
We're barely getting by as it is. Now we're going to pay more for lower quality care?
We've had tough times in this state before, but we've never fixed them by cutting health care. I know one thing. There has to be a better choice than cutting our hospitals and nursing homes.
Call Albany. Tell them to reject the governor's health care cuts. Cutting health care is simply the wrong choice. Paid for by the 1199 SEIU and GNYHA Healthcare Education Project.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in the narrow Waikigill walkway opposite Big Top and across the parking lot from the Food Emporium, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, Minuteman Press, down that walkway across from Big Top when you're heading to the Food Emporium, offers quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. In Westchester, 576-0335.
This is John Fix III from Cornell's True Value Hardware. For years, you've heard me talk about our family-owned hardware store in Eastchester and how we love helping our neighbors with all their home improvement needs. I've told you about our great service and selection and the wonderful associates who work at our store. And now I want to tell you about True Value Rewards, an exciting program that benefits you, our loyal customer. True Value Rewards is a free program that allows you to earn points and discounts on all your purchases. True Value Rewards members get 1 point for every dollar they spend at our store, and each time you accumulate 250 points, we'll mail you a certificate for $10. In addition, each month, selected products at Cornell's are specially priced exclusively for you, our True Value Rewards customer. And did I tell you that the program is free? Even better, when you sign up, you'll receive double points on your first purchase. For more information and to sign up, please stop by. The Cornell's Hardware Store is in Eastchester, between Scarsdale and Bronxville, on Route 22. Cornell's True Value Hardware, serving Westchester homeowners since 1909.
Let us tell you about a New York lifestyle right here in New Rochelle. The Lofts at New Rock at 145 Huguenot Street, featuring sophisticated oversized rooms, 11-foot ceilings with tinted floor-to-ceiling glass windows, and panoramic views of Long Island Sound, top-of-the-line tile bathrooms, state-of-the-art kitchens, including a microwave, a frost-free refrigerator, and a spacious dishwasher. There are full-sized washers and dryers, stunning wall-to-wall carpeting, and abundant closet space. Close to the train station, restaurants, and all shopping, the Lofts at New Rock also offers a cardio fitness center, a business center fully equipped with computers and internet access, plus a conference room and a comfortable lounge. 24-hour maintenance and security is their policy. In other words, the apartments and the living experience at the Lofts at New Rock is the ultimate. Large studios and fabulous 1- and 2-bedroom apartments are available for sale. Call them at 914-632-1200.
Forecast for Westchester County and the vicinity for this morning, mostly cloudy. A few showers, thunderstorms possible, and partly sunny this afternoon. Nice risk of a shower, thunderstorm into the lower 80s. Or the same tonight, middle 60s, mostly cloudy, showers, thunderstorms, some with heavy rainfall on Friday, highs in the upper 70s. And it clears out, partly to mostly sunny, both Saturday and Sunday. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr., reporting for WVOX, WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to celebrating our environment. This is Environmentally Sound with environmental activist Bob Lebensold on 1460 WVOX. Once again, here's Bob Lebensold.
Thank you. We are back on That's a Show. We celebrate our environment. Sometimes we have to really look out for it and hope that we can save it rather than celebrate it. When I'm in the woods by myself with the animals and the worms and the insects and the bears and the deer and the ticks, that's when I celebrate it when I'm personally. But when I'm out here, it's more of a battle than a celebration, unhappy to say. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. If you're listening in Greenboro Station, Ottawa, Greenboro, North Carolina, or in the Greenboro Apartments in West Melbourne, Florida, or if you are listening in Melbourne, Australia, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. The program is Environmentally Sound. My name is Bob Lebensold, and my next guest is Charles M. Blow, op-ed columnist for the New York Times. Charles published a column last Friday called Racism and the Race, which got him almost 600 email responses, which is quite a feat for a single column. As the title suggests, he addresses the under-discussed subject that we have a major party black presidential candidate speaking to us from the offices, I believe he's in the offices of the New York Times in Manhattan. Welcome, Charles M. Blow.
Thank you.
Good morning. Are you at the Times building?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's where you are. Well, let's get into it. The presidential candidates are an older, white, conservative, status quo kind of guy with military credentials running against a young, half-white, half-black, well-educated, articulate liberal. Now, of course, in America, half-black or even a quarter black is just plain black. Will race be the deciding factor in this election?
It could be. It you have to wait to see, but it could be. In my column, I quote a question and answer from a recent poll by the New York Times and CBS News. And when they ask whites whether or not they would be willing to vote for a black candidate, no name was included in the question, just a black candidate for president, only 5% said that they would not. However, when they rephrase the question and ask, would most of your friends, most of the people you know, not would be or would not be willing to vote for an African-American candidate, 19% of white respondents said that most of the people they knew would not be willing to vote
for. How do you account for that discrepancy, Charles?
Well, it's something they call the Bradley effect in political polling, which is that respondents are not, don't always tell the truth to pollsters when they feel that they will be judged for their answer. Sometimes it may be they're talking to a pollster who they perceive to be black because of the way they're speaking, and they've already said they're Democratic or independent or whatever they say, and they feel like if they say that they would not be willing to vote for a black candidate, that the pollster will judge them as racist, so they make up an answer that's not true. And that has happened several times. I mean, in the Tom Bradley for mayor of Los Angeles going into that election, he's up in the polls, comes out next day, he loses. Wilder, governor of Virginia, fighting for re-election, goes into the election day, 9 points up in the polls. He wins by, I think it's something like 0.5%.
Well, what was the situation with Bradley? I mean, he's just a regular white guy, right? How did that? What happened there? Bradley. Bradley ran, I presume this Bradley effect is named after him. He was running for something, and he, how did this affect him as a white candidate?
Okay.
Well, you did say that Bradley ran in L.A., did you say?
Yes.
And this effect, He was at a certain place in the polls, and then it changed dramatically in the actual election, correct?
Right.
Now, what was the situation there?
I mean, it's the same effect. I mean, you're saying that...
I mean, Bill Bradley wasn't a black candidate.
Not Bill Bradley, Tom Bradley.
Oh, he was a black candidate.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to figure out what you were saying.
Okay, now we understand each other.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the basketball player.
No.
Okay.
Tom Bradley.
Okay.
Longtime mayor of London.
Okay, now I gotcha. Okay, so this this effect does go. Now, what is the actual truth then? Is it somewhere between 5 and 19%?
Well, it's impossible to know. What you can discern is that it's probably somewhere in the middle there. It depends on whether or not how well people know the people they're talking about, how many friends they actually have. All of that plays into it, but you can, I think, reliably assume that it's higher than 5% of people who outwardly say that they wouldn't vote for a black candidate.
Now, a couple other things. This is a very interesting poll that you do cite in your column. When asked if race relations will get worse, if McCain is elected, 9% said yes, and if Obama's elected, 19% said it will get worse with Obama as the president. How do you account for that? Do you have any thoughts on that particular stat?
Well, I think it's all part and parcel of the same question. There are, I think, a lot of white people who are made uncomfortable about the idea of a black president. And you see a lot of that in the blogosphere on the internet about people, you know, kind of saying that this is the worst thing that could happen and all of the things that it would mean if it were to happen. And it's kind of feeding a sort of certain fear and apprehension among that part of the electorate.
Mm-hmm. If Obama were not black, would he be doing better in the polls, do you think?
I think if he had the same kind of charisma and kind of oratory skills and was just as intelligent and was able to raise just as much money, I think he would be doing much better.
Do you think he's raising money better because he's black or just for his views or because of people who, let's call it the Bush effect?
Well, I think some of that, all of that's probably true, but I think the biggest part of his fundraising mechanism is his has been his ability to tap social networks on the internet, and it is those small, particularly in the beginning, it was those small donations that made the big difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, I expressed this to you yesterday. I've been uncomfortable when he started sounding. Now, I'm firmly in the Obama camp. There's no question about who I would vote for, even though I don't disrespect McCain as I often and vociferously have disrespected both President Bush and Dick Cheney. I don't consider them to be patriotic in any way. I don't consider them even to be Americans after what I believe America is. I don't think Thomas Jefferson and George Washington or Abraham Lincoln would approve of these guys either. So, of course, with that little rant, I lost what I was I was saying. Let me ask you another question. How have attitudes of black people in America adjusted to the Obama candidacy? We know that he is really popular overseas. We know that the media overseas and the populace overseas, when they've been asked, to my knowledge, have all reacted very favorably to the possibility of Obama, Barack Obama, being president of the United States. Is that reflected here and the attitudes of blacks in particular towards the Obama candidacy? How has it affected the average black citizen here to have a major candidate? Yes.
Yeah, my read is that there's quite a bit of pride. It's a symbolic victory in a way, even for him to be the nominee, whether or not he wins the general election or not. People see it as a source of pride. I think a lot of people personally identify and invest a lot of emotion into his candidacy, and to the degree that whenever he's attacked, a lot of people, I think, also feel attacked. And when he wins, they feel like they've won. There's a really interesting dynamic that's happening with people attaching themselves to him as a person of African American, kind of African lineage, And it also plays itself out in other kind of ethnic or African countries. If you look at, you know, when I remember CNN did this interesting roundup of response to him winning a nomination, a lot of the response from Africa was incredible. And they, I think, identify with him as kind of a global identification at people of African descent.
So is there anything about him that is especially, when black people get together, do they talk about Obama because of his race, or do they talk about his ideas? Do they talk about how America would be better off? Is the race issue in any way, does it ever evaporate in discourse, or is it always there? Is it always attached to him?
He will never be able to get away from the race issue. So, I mean, every conversation that anyone has about Barack Obama, whether or not, whatever their race is, the race issue is present in the conversation, even if it's not articulated.
Uh-huh.
So,
I
think a lot of people, both black and white, are kind of enthusiastic about him because they see the possibility of a candidate bringing a lot of different people who look very differently together for a common cause. And I think that appeals to people quite a bit because, you know, the issues, he's very articulate about what he feels on the issues, but I feel like that is the second, you know, for people who agree with his positions, those are the secondary benefits. The first benefit is the symbol of a uniting force and someone who they feel could bring people together and also reaches, like you said, across the oceans and people everywhere seem to look at him as a figure who could bring people together.
Okay, we are speaking with Charles M. Blow, an op-ed columnist for the New York Times. I'm going to take just a moment to tell you about one of my sponsors and to tell you that you're listening to WVOX AM 1460 out of New Rochelle, New York. If you're anywhere but Southern Westchester, Southern Connecticut, Northern Bronx, the North Shore of Long Island, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. Let me just tell you about the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York. You can reach them at 914-835-1070. I'll repeat that number in a minute. There are all kinds of businesses and other tutoring companies. This is a tutoring company, but the Learning Shop is set apart by their personnel and their company culture. And it's the Learning Shop, not the Learning Center, not the Learning Store. Some people make those mistakes. It's the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York. They're set apart by their personnel and their company culture, and I'm part of that culture. I hang with them. I know them. It's a wonderfully educational environment, and I'm usually highly critical of educational environments. There's something about education that invites structure without rigidity, discipline without anxiety, teaching without stuffiness. And the management and staff at the Learning Shop are friendly, educated, and flexible. Not just intelligent, because there's a lot of intelligent fools, but they're smart as well. And the distinction is an important one. Most teachers are intelligent, but that is an internal trait. When intelligence comes out into the room and has the ability to touch others, that's when it becomes smart. So if someone you know, or if you yourself, could benefit from private instruction, give the Learning Shop a call at 914-835-1070. They are also the company of choice for homebound instruction for many Westchester communities. Okay, again, the number is 914-835-1070. They are my friends. Okay, now back to Charles Blow, who is an op-ed columnist for the New York Times. Last Friday's column was called Racism and Race, is that what it was?
Racism and the Race,
right. Okay, one thing that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, and I just have to express this, I've never liked it when politicians get up and act like preachers, and they're rather than leading by example and by ideas, they lead by charisma. Now, he's a charismatic fellow, and that's fine. But he does sometimes get up there, and he does sometimes, he acts and sounds just like a preacher. If he was speaking in another language, I'd be sure he was talking about Jesus, not about the presidency of the United States. And then there are some people who just adulate him, and they look up as if he's the Messiah. I am uncomfortable with that. How do you feel about that, Charles?
Well, I think it makes quite a few people uncomfortable, and I think that what ends up happening with Barack Obama, and I think, you know, he is kind of led by this, and even when he went to Jerusalem and put his prayer into the wall, he said, it said something about, you know, help me to not be proud, he's fed by this idea that he is somehow bigger than a politician, not even a politician, but the director of a movement. And that, I think, you know, viewing him in that light becomes dangerous. It sets people up to be disappointed. He is a politician, a very clever, very shrewd politician. And to his credit, you have to be a politician to be the president.
Right.
But I think a lot of people don't see him in that light. They want to see him as transcending politics. And that's not how government is made. And he won't do that.
And he said he wouldn't do that. It's hard to get that message through the way he carries himself, but I hope he has said that. Tell me, will virtually all blacks vote for Obama, or will some say, nope, I'm Republican, I don't believe what he says, and even though it'd be nice to have a black guy up there, I'd rather have a black more like Clarence Thomas?
Well, historically, blacks overwhelmingly vote for the Democratic candidate in the general election.
Anyway, right.
You know, in our poll, 89% blacks say they were going to vote for Barack Obama, but in 2004, 88% voted for John Kerry. It really doesn't matter in the general election. You know, but one interesting point is that when you asked people, both blacks and whites were asked whether they would be willing to vote for a black candidate, 5% of whites confessed that they would not. 6% of black people said that they would not.
They would not. Vote for a black candidate.
Yes.
Well, I've spoken to black people who said they would only go to a Jewish doctor. They wouldn't go to a black doctor. Mm-hmm. Now, that's kind of contradictory in a way, but I understand it. The fact is, I'm Jewish and I have a black doctor, and I'm very happy, so I guess there's no accounting for those things. Tell me, what about Hispanics, Asians, other people of color? Do they identify, or is this, what did you call it, brown racism or something?
Well, yeah, the black-brown divide. Uh-huh. I mean, there is quite a bit of friction between Hispanics and blacks in some parts of the country. And so you saw that play out in the primaries, where Hillary Clinton overwhelmingly carried the Hispanic vote. In some cases, 65-70% of Hispanic vote. And that is a large part of why she was able to carry some of the bigger states. For instance, California. California had 440 delegates. The white vote split pretty much down the middle, 46 for Clinton, 45 for Obama. Black vote skewed to Obama with 78%, but the Hispanic vote skewed heavily to Hillary Clinton. 67% of Hispanics voted for Hillary Clinton. And that makes a big difference in a state like California, because African Americans are only 7% of the population. Uh-huh.
But will they come back to Barack now?
Well, they generally vote Democratic.
Hispanics, Asians, and other people of color.
Right, right.
Not just blacks.
Right, right. Latinos generally vote
Democratic
in the general election,
okay,
but not to the same degree that blacks.
Okay. I've spoken to some people, and interesting attitudes. I'd like your take on this. How will the attitudes of blacks be affected if Obama loses? Will they just accept it as saying, okay, that's politics, or will they say they just did it to us again? If blacks are hyped up having a major candidate, and many whites are hyped up too, myself included, but if Obama loses, is there going to be a big emotional letdown?
I think there could be an emotional letdown, but I also think that the possibility that he will lose is built into the expectation. I think a lot of people believe that it's very possible that he will not win. They
okay.
want desperately for him to win,
yes,
but they believe that he might not. I think that it'll be a letdown, but I think that it's already calibrated in people's minds.
Okay. Yeah, now I feel, I think it'd be great to have a person of color as president, but I also believe that as far as just what he stands for, America needs these policies, whether it is Obama or Hillary or anybody else. Is America, and this is a kind of a crux question, is America racist? I think I can answer that. Is it more racist than other countries? And what is it about racial purity that is so important to whites, and even blacks seem to discriminate sometimes against people darker than themselves. What is race all about in America and perhaps in general?
Well, that's a big question.
Big question, and we have about 4 minutes to answer it.
Okay. Well, obviously, race is there's racism in America, and yet America has a very long history with this issue. It will always be there. It will always play itself out in some way. Whether or not we'll ever be able to conquer it, get over it, I'm not sure that we'll ever be able to erase it completely, but there's a lot to be said about younger people who do not seem to impose register race in the same way that older people do. So in some ways, we may age out of some of our nastiest kind of beliefs and convictions.
Mm-hmm. Well, you answered it in less than the 4 minutes. Well, you know, I think your contribution with this column called Racism in the Race. Anyone wants to look up the archive, it's published August 8th, I think, or August 9th, I'm not sure. I think it was August 9th it was published, which was last Saturday. Your contribution to the dialogue is to make this issue overt, is to bring it out. Sometimes there are issues that are very important and people, they don't look at it. That's where we get the whole expression, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You sit around and you pretend that there's no big issue there. And yet here we have, for the first time in America, a truly major, attractive, charismatic, young, forward-thinking American of color whose father was African and whose mother is a white woman, so he's actually mulatto. He's half and half. And yet he's perceived, black people like own him more than white people do just because of the nature of the beast. So that's what I think your contribution is to make this a real issue and to say, look, here's the gorilla. I'm putting a light on him. Take a look and examine your own attitudes. And I personally thank you for that. Do you have about a minute to say anything else you'd like, Charles?
Yes. Well, I just found this to be very interesting. You mentioned before I got almost 600 emails. Most of those people were my white readers who basically were confessing that they were part of that 19%, that they were surrounded by people who were saying things that they never thought that those people believed. They were very negative. They were very racist, although most of those people did not consider themselves to be racist. Mm-hmm. But they would never, ever consider voting for a black candidate. And I found that to be striking.
Interesting.
Because these people were so surprised by it.
Okay, Charles, thanks. We are out of time. I thank you very much for coming on. Anybody out there wants to download this interview, it'll be on www.environmentallysound.org in a couple of days. Thanks so much, Charles.
You're welcome.
Okay. I'd like to thank Peter Parente and Charles Blow for joining us on Environmentally Sound today. Whether or not you agree with their point of view, there's little doubt that the New York Times hires bright, thoughtful, well-informed men and women as reporters and editors. Charles addresses an issue that was so obvious it was ignored, like the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Barack Obama is black. There, I said it. That is, he is half black, which is the same thing in America. Somehow, if you do not have so little black blood that it doesn't show, you are black. How will this affect American history? We are about to find out. Thought for the week. Happiness gives us the energy, which is the basis of health. Stay tuned to WVOX for Howard Sterman. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.
You've been listening to Environmentally Sound on 1460 WVOX. Environmentally Sound, hosted by environmental activist Bob Lebensold. Join Bob at 10 a.m. every other Thursday for Environmentally Sound on 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com.